Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to shift gears on you. You know, we've been talking a lot about financial topics, buying and selling businesses, a lot of different things lately. But I want to shift back to the home front, so to speak, to our security of our homeland here. And I've invited an author, homeland security expert, to come on the line. And I'm going to introduce him. Brett, is it Brayton?
It's pronounced Broughton.
Broughton. All right. Well, I'm glad we got that straight. Broughton. Brett Broughton. Welcome to the program, Brett.
Thank you very much, David.
All right. I invited Brett to come on. He is a homeland security expert. Let me give him a quick rundown of your background here, Brett, and then you can fill in some of the details. 29 years as a federal special agent and resident agent in charge of with both the U.S. Customs Service and the Department of Homeland Security. So first, thank you sincerely for your service to our country.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. And he maintains contact with former colleagues. He keeps a real-time perspective of what's going on with the security of our country and has a bachelor's in speech communication from the University of Minnesota, which I'm sure that came in handy being in the roles you take and being able to communicate. And he's written the book, Homeland Insecurity. And that book, the website is homeland-insecurity.com. So again, welcome, Brett. Anything else in your background that would be helpful for our listeners as we get into our discussion today?
I grew up in a border town in northeast Minnesota, International Falls. If your listeners ever watch national news, if it's cold and it's wintertime, it's generally International Falls. It is a cold spot. So that's where we're from. I had all those years growing up there. So I've had experience since I was small with Canadian border, and then that grew into a career later on after graduating from college. And those are my humble beginnings.
Well, there's nothing humble of what continued from there on out, which was the 29-year career. I'm impressed when somebody puts that kind of time in that kind of function. So you've seen, I imagine, a whole host of things. And so let me ask you what my listeners are going, David, go ahead and ask them, how secure are we?
There was just some congressional testimony on the 13th yesterday, Wednesday, from Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano. And she has said this before, said back in 2011, and will repeat it. She says the borders have never been safer, and we've never been more secure repeatedly. And this is usually in furthering a political agenda. I have done a fair amount of research. This time, just going back to congressional records, a November 2012 report from the U.S. Committee on Homeland Security entitled A Line in the Sand, Countering Crime, Violence, and Terror at the Southwest Border. Some of the major findings, I can run down just a couple if we have just a moment.
Certainly.
They say in this report that despite beefing up security at the airports, the U.S.-Mexico border remains an obvious weak link in the chain. We've got 1,954 miles of border with Mexico, and we have got less than 18% that is really under operational control by the Border Patrol. So in terms of being able to respond, they can't. There's just not enough people, and it's just too big an area. Of course, the government comes up with ideas to use technology to provide security technology that ultimately fails and then is closed down, like the Secure Border Initiative, which was going to use satellite imagery and, I think, aerostats, which are radar suspended dirigibles over the border. All of that was closed down, so this virtual fence that they were going to put in place involving sensors and monitoring has never come to pass, so largely it's unguarded. But what's really troubling, this is what's really troubling, and Janet Napolitano has access to the same information. If I, as now a civilian, can go through congressional records and hearings and find this, there is absolutely no excuse why, and she obviously knows this, but just quickly, Iran and Hezbollah have a growing presence in Latin America. Experts believe the Southwest border has become the great threat of terrorist infiltration into the United States. I'm reading this directly from their report. Latin America has become a money laundering and major fundraising center for Hezbollah. We have them here in our own country. Their relationship with Mexican drug cartels has grown and involves the secure smuggling of terrorist operatives into this country. In fact, the last statement under the major findings, if Iran's assassination plot against the Saudi Arabian ambassador in Washington, D.C. had been successful, Iran's COD forces intended to use Lozada's drug cartel for other attacks. Right now, Iran has 11 embassies and 17 cultural centers in Central and South America. We know where they're going with their nuclear program. We know that they are actively in trade with unmonitored, unregulated trade with Venezuela. And they're, in fact, Turkish customs just seized a shipment of chemicals routinely used in weapons of mass destruction being shipped from Iran to Venezuela. So this is what we're dealing with. And it just curdles my blood to think that an official in charge of Homeland Security can come out repeatedly and try to snow us under and thinking, yeah, we're safe.
Well, I appreciate, Brett, your very candid observation about this, because I can't get it through my head why we can't solve our illegal immigration problem. And because it is not only has an impact on in terms of crime, in terms of the employment issues that it creates, but also the security risk. I just can't understand it. And it's become such a political game that here we have some 1,900 miles of border and we can't secure it, but we go overseas and we help countries like Afghanistan and Iraq and other places secure their territories. But for political expediency and posturing, we can't do it here at home.
Well, one of the interesting things, just turn back the clock a bit, go back to the 9/11. This will go a long way, miles, in explaining why we're where we're at. In just looking at, once again, the 9/11 Commission report, which is available to everyone if they go and Google it and they can pull it off the Internet themselves, but just to synopsize, there has been a kid-glove approach over the years, certainly during the time I was an inspector, and I wasn't personally involved except for an airport experience in St. Louis, Missouri for a short time before becoming an agent, with Saudi nationals who were given the red carpet treatment. So prior to the 9/11 attacks, there must have been a congressional complaint over some routine examination by an immigration inspector to determine whether or not an influential Saudi was admissible to the United States. And when a Saudi writes a letter of complaint, no doubt Congress pays attention to it. So 15 of the 19 hijackers, 15 of 19 were Saudi nationals. They applied for 23 visas, got 22. They used 364 aliases. They entered the U.S. 34 times over 21 months. Now, Atta, who was the ringleader of the group and flew his plane into the North Tower, he was a pilot, and so he had muscle in the back controlling the passengers. He was a controller. He came back from Madrid, presumably for a wrap-up meeting in Spain with some of the organizers, and he came through Miami Beach, through Miami, Florida, actually. Did not have documents necessary to permit his admission as a student, which they all claimed to be. Did not have any of the supporting documents. He should have been kicked back out of the country and not permitted here. This was just months before the attack. Mm. Now just play this out in your mind. If he had been held out, what would have happened to the rest? If he was a ringleader, the organizer, the controller, and he is no longer there, I'm not saying it would never have happened, but would it have happened on that particular day? I don't know. I can't see into the future, that future, what it might have been. But you can only guess, saying that things might have been upset, certainly, to an extreme point with his not being allowed back into the country.
Brett Broughton is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, author, Homeland Security expert. The book is Homeland Insecurity, and the website is homeland-insecurity.com. Quick break, Brett. We'll be right back.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Okay, so I want to come back to the border question, and I'm going to say something that maybe it's not politically correct, but could we, if we wanted to, secure our border?
No, I think so.
Okay, could we not? I mean, we have all of these forces overseas. We're bringing them back. Could we not do what a lot of other countries do and put a military presence on our border? And could we have 1,900 miles of monitored, enforced border where literally nobody got across?
We did have 1,200 National Guard troops that were assigned down there. I'm not sure when it started, probably during the Bush years. I think primarily they were not boots on the ground in terms of holding guns at the border like Minutemen, yeah, but were there for intelligence analysis. Now they've been reduced to 300 by design. We have now vast tracts of land closed down to use by American citizens because it's too dangerous, because there's drug smuggling and human trafficking going on. That's the new normal. That's the buzzword I use, the new normal.
Yeah, and here's what I want to make sure we're clear about, because I think this is too often not discussed candidly. If we wanted to, we could stop all illegal immigration, all drug running across the border and all this stuff, by having 1,900 miles of a secure border, if we put our military or whatever else, build a real fence, build real towers, and have that thing. And hey, it'd be great for economic stimulus anyway. Build it and use taxpayer dollars to do it, and it'd be good for our economy. I don't get it, Brett, because it's just become this ridiculous political football. I don't know. I just don't want to hear people saying we can't do it. We can do it. We just simply choose not to.
They choose not to because they don't want to give the impression that we're militarizing the border, and that's the reason why they're not doing it.
And we should militarize it, and it doesn't mean we're racist. It doesn't mean that we don't want people to come from all other countries, but you got to do it legally, and it's just so grossly unfair to the people that enter this country legally and who wait the whole, you know, six-month, year, two-year process to do it legally. It's grossly unfair to them, and we put ourselves at a significant security risk, and I share your concern about the influence of Iran and then using the gangs and all of that, all of the nasty guys that want to get to us. If I were going to do it, that's how I'd do it. I'd come across the southern border. So I want to jump to something else because I know you can speak to this. How do we, since it's, the government's not going to do it, at least not yet, how do we as individuals prepare our families? How do we prepare a response so we can protect ourselves?
I've been asked that question a number of times. And here's, it basically boils down to this. We can control what goes on within our four walls, our own four walls. We can't control the border. We can only elect people that represent our views. But in terms of family, that's precisely what I'm doing. I'm answering the call and putting together training for families and the kids, especially with what's going on in schools and this apparent losing, no, not apparent, this losing strategy of telling the kids, lie down, play dead, here, wear your Kevlar backpack. You'll be fine. It's just ludicrous. I just can't imagine this. So it's something I intend to do in the coming month or so to put together subcontractors who can help me train American families.
Do that. I love it. Do it, and let me know when you do, and come back and we'll talk about it on the radio, because I think we need to stop being victims and stop just taking this lay-down approach. We need to be prepared, and it's okay to protect ourselves and to be ready for that. If you're just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, Brett Broughton is our guest. He's an author, Homeland Security Expert. The book is Homeland Insecurity. It doesn't have to be that way, and Brett talks about that in his book, homeland-insecurity.com. Quick break, Brett. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we are back with Brett Broughton. He's written the book, Homeland Insecurity, Failed Politics, Policies, and a Nation at Risk. And he did that based on his own personal experience, having been a federal special agent and resident agent, 29 years in the career in that service. So, Brett, where would you like to go next? You want to talk a little bit more about the family preparedness, or you'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the impact that these things are having on our trade and competition in the global marketplace?
I think we can go from the security issue to how it affects family. I can wrap that up fairly quickly.
Good.
Move on to that point. Just to give people an idea, there is a body count that's piling up of agents and Border Patrol agents who are getting killed on the southwest border. The Border Patrol agents, who are the front line in between ports of entry, are charged with shooting non-lethal Bing Bag rounds at drug smugglers who are shooting live rounds at them. So this is the overall mentality of our government, is that we're arming our people with bean bags to shoot back at people who are trying to kill them. So the Brian Terry episode is a good indication back in December, I believe it was 2010, where he was out on patrol. He had beanbag rounds in his gun on orders, and he was shot with an AK-47 and died at the scene. Two agents, Jaime Zapata recently was killed in a shooting in Mexico while going from a border town back to Mexico City. He was in a diplomatic vehicle stopped by Zetas, a traffic stop that they had set up a roadblock. They managed to get guns into the window because when he stopped the car, put it in park, he unfortunately put the window down button, and they got a barrel of a gun through the window and killed him and shot the other fellow as well. This is what we're dealing with. So the book was designed to open people's eyes to say, you know, this is the real demeanor of our government. They're not playing hardball on the border. So how much easier are they making it on folks within the interior that have their sights set on doing us some harm or create mischief? So in reading the book, they'll understand this is really the government's demeanor, so we have to take charge. What do people do? People can only prepare within, you know, those actions that occur within their four walls. I'm going to talk about internet safety, but you talk about how to respond, because so much of what I've read is based on the response of children, of people to crisis. So this is all crisis management. This is about seeing a crisis arise and responding without hesitation. So we have to get people into that way of thinking. And I hope to roll out some training on that in the coming months.
Do that, Brett. I tell you what,
folks who can learn that.
Yeah, I want to emphasize to you just how ignorant we are out here in the general public, okay? Because I did not know that our agents are shooting beanbags. I know that's a term you're using for the kind of ammo. I thought our agents were using regular munitions. I can't think.
These are real. These are beanbags. These are authentic beanbags. When I say beanbag, it's not a misnomer for an actual round. No, these are beanbags.
Okay. So here we have guys being shot at by high caliber, high magazine capacity weapons, and we're arming our guys with beanbags, and we're supposed to keep our border safe. I got to tell you, Brett, that is the most ridiculous thing I think I have heard in at least a year. And nobody knows that out here. I didn't know that. So obviously that's something we need to make sure people are aware of. How in the world can we secure a border if we can't even, kill the guys that are shooting at you? That's what you're supposed to do.
Well, we continue to move the line of the sand, so now there are vast tracts of land in the Southwest not usable by citizens. Vast tracts of land that are closed down because of the dangers posed by human and drug trafficking. And this, as I've said many times to other groups, is the new normal. They move the line on the sand, then we're told, well, this is the new normal, and we just put it out of our minds. And we figure, well, I guess it's always been that way. Just like going through TSA, who would have imagined 10 years ago or 15 years ago going through an x-ray machine before you get on a flight?
Yeah, I hear you. But it's a lot easier for them to get across the border. The book is Homeland Insecurity. The author is Brett Broughton, and he is an expert in this area. The website is homeland-insecurity.com. I need one more quick break, Brett, and we'll be right back to talk about the impact of all of this on U.S. trade competition and the global marketplace. Stay right there.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Brett Broughton is our guest today, and the book is Homeland Insecurity. The website is homeland-insecurity.com. Okay, so where does this put us in the world, Brett, with our global position and marketplace and how we compete?
First of all, just two quick things. The big lie that's been told a number of times, and I found contrary evidence when I've been out doing worksite enforcements, which means immigration customs agents go to a worksite and they have probable cause, obtain a search warrant, and they detain people who are identified as illegal aliens, and then they deport them. We were in Nebraska a number of years ago, and we were at a livestock processing plant, a pretty gory place. Would you imagine 6,000 head marching through there being processed?
Yeah.
There were a large number of illegals that were rounded up in a nationwide swing. So we've heard jobs Americans don't want. Well, after I talked to a chemist who was there testing for contamination. She said, you know, what took you guys so long? Years ago, these were all Americans here. Then the illegals started coming, filtering in, and wages start going down.
Well,
so
you know.
It's not the case of not wanting the job. The Americans, once we cleared out the illegals from that site, they came back.
So
Americans
in other words,
came back.
Yeah, so in other words, it's a lot of bull, okay? It's a lot of bull that we're being told these are jobs Americans don't want. No, Americans don't have a chance to get them because an illegal comes in, and then obviously the employer takes advantage of that and pays somebody half the wage off the books or whatever. And then we're having a national debate about minimum wage. Give me a break.
The last thing I'll talk about with respect, we already know industries that have suffered here. I live in Georgia. We know what happened. The textile industry, based on foreign competition, is no longer quota visa protection for a textile industry. So Senator Harry Reid can come out and say we should burn the Chinese manufactured uniforms that the Olympic athletes are going to be wearing I don't know where we go in the United States to get people who are still making things. The last thing I wanted to talk about is for all those folks who are co-signing student loan debt for their children, there's the H-1B student visa program, which is sanctioned by the U.S. What happens, the U.S. businesses apply to get an applicant from foreign countries, usually China, India, to come to this country to take a higher-paying, well-educated job, basically. So they have to show that Americans are not qualified. So what they've done is and this is not illegal to set it up this way. They set up the interviews to ask such incredibly, difficult questions that the American kids cannot possibly pass it. They then go to the government and they say, we need a worker to take the place of this person. No American could pass it. So now we have 85,000 per year foreign workers, some PhD level, coming to this country. I can stay here for 6 years. So do the math, 85,000 times six, they can stay for six, then apply for green card. These folks are coming here because businesses are saying, and I've talked to business owners saying, our American graduates cannot compete with foreign competition based on what they're learning in college. So I would ask all those parents out there sending their kids to whatever college, paying whatever they are to say, is it worth it? Because our kids coming out with these math science degrees just can't cut it when it comes to foreign competition.
Our guest today, Brett Broughton, is weighed in heavily on this homeland insecurity issue. He's also written the book, and I can't wait to read it myself, Brett. Homeland-insecurity.com. We'll have you back. Tell us about the Homefront family preparedness when you've got it ready. Thanks for being on the program.
It's been my pleasure, David, and I wish your audience well. Best wishes.
Thank you very much.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.